Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Riverfront. This is episode number 486 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast, where we discuss the Cincinnati Reds and occasionally Luis Alberto Bonilla.
Yeah, we do.
I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again this week, your friend and mine, Nate. How are you, Nate?
What kind of question is that?
You're always.
I missed last week's episode because it was my birthday. Happy birthday to me. We had a blast. Thank you for asking. So I haven't got to talk about the Reds in a public platform since they've been good. They were the last time, 2 weeks ago, they were fun, but now they're good. So yeah. I'm excited for this show.
Do you remember, before we go any further, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, smash the subscribe button. If you're listening to the audio version, why not subscribe? Have my dulcet tones delivered to your phone every single week. So everywhere you find podcasts, Riverfront. Nate, so, you know, we sort of had this thing, kind of a running gag here for a few weeks where we would pretend to be excited that the Reds weren't in last place. You know, we did it again every week that they weren't in last place. And, you know, we have talked all year long about how fun this team is and how we're, even if they're not great, we're having fun watching because the collection of individual players are just fun. Nate, how did we get here? The Cincinnati Reds are America's team. They're in first place, a game and a half ahead of Milwaukee. They are the hottest team in baseball. 11 wins in a row. Had an 8-1 road trip that included sweeps of Kansas City and, oh yeah, the defending champs, Houston, in Houston. Then they return home and sweep Mike Moustakas's Colorado Rockies. It's the longest franchise win streak since 1957, and they have the Braves coming to town here, another hot team and a good team, for a battle, as we all expected, a battle of two first-place teams in the National League. Let's go. How did we get here? What is even going on?
Well, I while I was gone, I told everybody it was my birthday, but actually, I was on a pilgrimage. I ventured over to Statistics Mountain, and I scaled the mountain to consult my analytic guru. And he told me how we got there. And it turns out, if you don't lose games, good things happen. So the Reds just stopped losing games. I think they went from last to first in like, maybe it's next to last to first, whatever, in 17 days or 17 games. Yeah. And this is
last.
On the back of
last. Yeah.
Atrocious starting pitching. Abysmal. But the team, as they have all season long, they never give up. They keep fighting. And these young guys that we've been excited about all year long, they're playing well at the exact same time. And yeah. nobody in their wildest dreams could have expected that to happen. You can hope it. You can't expect it. And then they got a little injection of some old man just energy.
The old man injection.
Old man energy. I had to choose my words wisely there. From Joseph Daniel Votto. And I don't know, man. The vibes are as good as I can remember them being.
Yeah, let's talk about the vibes for a moment. And I do want to talk specifically about Joey Votto's return, because obviously we had an emergency podcast. Tim Daniels hopped on with me. Literally, this is Monday night. It's 11:15 or something. I haven't finished writing my Cincinnati Magazine column that was due to be published the next day, because it was about Votto, and I was kind of waiting to see what happened in the game, and that was a perfect thing to do, was to wait because of what happened. And so we just were like, we really should do an emergency podcast. And we jumped on and did, you know, I don't know how long we were on for, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever. And the number of people that jumped on the live stream was, we decided, let's just go live. Let's just do it live. And man, that was so much fun. And that vibe that you just mentioned, we're feeling it in the fan base. And that's a great thing because it's been so long. And the game Saturday night is sold out. The game Friday night, I think, is almost sold out. A non-opening day game is sold out. I love it. I always said there's a lost generation of Reds fans, but when the team's good again, that's what it takes. And they will support a winner. So anyway, but the vibe I want to talk about is not among the fan base, although I'm just love it. I'm really enjoying it. When people aren't attacking me on Twitter, they're being really great and we're having fun. The vibe on the team. And now I'm not in the clubhouse. So, you know, I can't speak for exactly what it is, but I know what I see. And I think back to this spring And if you remember Jonathan India, we've talked about it a number of times here. Jonathan, he said, I want to be the leader here. I want this thing to reflect, you know, my leadership. And a lot of people kind of mocked him. And I don't think you and I did. I think we were like, well, you can't really declare yourself a leader, but love the energy, love the enthusiasm, love mm-hmm. that he wants to be. And, I, you know, again, this is the chemistry argument, as Chris Garber and I talked about last week. It's so overused, you don't really know. But this team sure does seem like they have it. And they take their lead without question from Jonathan India. He's the heart and soul of this team. And it doesn't hurt that he's playing really, really well. So all I can say is that sort of vibe that comes from India that has infected the entire team, and having a bunch of young kids that are willing to take on mm-hmm. that sort of vibe because they don't know any better. They don't know that the Reds are supposed to be awful. You know, as far as they know, the Reds are always good because they just got here. And so that's what goes into this sort of, again, it's sort of a narrative. Everybody in the media is searching for a narrative, but this, you know, they never quit. They never quit. But they really never quit. Now, they're professional athletes. They shouldn't quit. They're paid to literally play as hard as they can the entire time. But they keep coming back. They get down in games. And I'm like, well, it's been a while, I guess, since they got down in games. And I felt like, that's okay. We're going to, you know, we got a shot.
Yeah.
Shot here still. And so it's that's what's been fun about it to me. We do have to talk about the pitching that you mentioned, because that's if you want to be worried about something, that's the thing to be worried about. But just the energy and the enthusiasm and the come from behind, never say die Reds. It's fun. It's as fun as I've had watching the Reds since 2012. And we're talking more than a decade. And I think you said even longer for you.
It is the most fun I've had since Clinchmas. It's not even close. Granted, there's a caveat there. For 2012, right. I was not living in the country, so I didn't get to watch the games live very often. I was either following on Gamecast or, in the case of the playoffs, breaking down a bar's door that kind enough to let me use their Wi-Fi. You don't need chemistry to be a winning ball club, but you can't convince me it doesn't help if you have it.
Yeah.
And this team has it. Just yesterday, as we're recording this, you're seeing a quarter of the team is at the FC Cincinnati game. Jonathan India is pulling the sword out pregame. The fans are going crazy. Just today, pictures going around of Alexis Diaz, I think Daniel Duarte, a couple of the other guys, the Spencer Steer, all at the zoo together. It's like the team is hanging out. They're bringing their kids. There's this camaraderie that I haven't seen on a Reds team in a long time. A lot of that's because social media. You don't get to see these things. You don't get to look behind the curtain. But this team gets along. Jonathan India has been setting the tone. I don't care how you feel about his leadership declaration. He is the guy. You know, after Joey Votto hits his home run in his second at bat, obviously he got his flowers, but then you look in the dugout after he's high-fived everybody, who's the last person he's talking to? Jonathan India. But Jonathan India seems to be approaching even that in a respectful way. Like they're doing it the right way. They're playing the game hard. They're playing it respectfully. They're playing it professionally. So even the old Facebook Reds fan crews can be happy with the brand of baseball they're playing for the most part, because they're showing up, going about their business, but they have an expectation to win that we have not seen in Cincinnati. I certainly haven't. I haven't felt this way in a long, long time. And that, man, like I've been on Twitter a lot. That's how much fun this team has been, because Twitter isn't horrible when the team is winning, or it's less horrible. It's still terrible, but.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned Twitter, because Twitter is awful when the Reds are bad. It's awful most of the time. But when I first got into Twitter, it was around that 2010 season when the Reds were first good. And I actually, in that year, you know, and a lot of the crew that I sort of still talk to on Twitter, so that same crew that we all got to know each other during that time, the sort of believe Reds, because we used to say that all the time, you know, believe they can win. We'd never seen it. And actually, I still follow probably a dozen Philadelphia Phillies fan accounts, because during that playoffs, we all followed each other. We're talking about the series, and it was a different vibe back then. I still follow them. Jonathan India is, again, he's still a kid, but these kids, they're I don't know. He may be the perfect leader. Chemistry, like you said, chemistry is something people usually talk about in retrospect. Like, oh man, that team that won the World Series, they just really seem to have good chemistry. And usually it's correlated to wins. Here it's correlated to win some, but we were actually saying this when they were a not good but fun team. Man, they just look like they're having fun together, getting along. I have a trivia question for you, Nate. I don't want you to look this up. Trivia time. You ready for some trivia time?
Can I pass? The Reds have a number. I'm gonna pass.
The Reds have a number of good young hitters. Okay, we'll get to pitching in a moment, as I said. Which Cincinnati Reds player, no minimum plate appearances, which Cincinnati Reds player has the highest OPS plus? OPS, of course, OPS plus normalizes OPS, a 100 OPS. For those OPS plus, for those of you who don't know, is average. Anything above that is, you know, 101 is supposed to be 1% above average. Who has the highest OPS plus on this year's Cincinnati Reds so far?
Joey Votto? No minimum plate appearances?
No minimum plate appearance. Let me check to make sure that he didn't actually sneak in, because I'm not sure how I looked at him. It is Joey Votto. Darn it, Nate!
Not Joey Votto, I was going to guess Ellie De La Cruz.
Let's say a minimum 13 plate appearances so that Joey Votto is not eligible. And that also
my guess is
Matt Reynolds isn't eligible either, by the way.
Crap. There's my second guess. I'm going to guess Ellie De La Cruz.
I've been getting a little bit of feedback like, you know, what's up with Ellie that he's not adjusting? The league has adjusted him and he's not adjusted. And then I go and look at his numbers and I'm like, because that didn't make sense to me. But yeah, he has a 143 OPS plus, 321 batting average, 387 on base, 536 slugging. He's struck out 19 times. He has, but he's walked six. But look at these other guys that have these good OPS pluses. Spencer Steer, 117. Jonathan India, 107. Matt McClain, 124. So that's three out of the top four are rookies. If you don't include Votto, the top three are rookies. Jake Fraley, or should I say Rake Fraley, 117. TJ Friedel, thank you very much, 129.
He's been doing it for almost a calendar year now. Like, we're getting close to that. It was August of last year when he came back.
TJ Friedel, I'm ready to say he's the Chris Sabo of this team. A guy that arrives late and may have a short peak. I mean, you know, he may not be a really good productive player for long, because most of these guys that arrive late don't, but can be a really productive player for a while. And you're right. The sample size is getting to where it's not small. There's one other Cincinnati Reds player that has an above average OPS plus, Nate. One other Reds player.
I was wondering how long. We're only 13 minutes in. I would have taken the under. You said it at 13, 14 minutes. You must be talking about
the man,
Willie Benson.
Oh, my goodness. How good is Will Benson?
Willie. Listen, we don't know yet. The guy gets on base at the Joey Votto-esque clip, which was kind of the book on him, was that he walks a ton, strikes out a ton. If he can figure out that strikeout thing, he can be a real player. Have you noticed the strikeout thing since he got back?
Yeah.
It's not a thing anymore. He almost doesn't miss pitches.
He's walked the same number of times as Jose Barrero and struck out half as many times, exactly. Yeah. So that tells you anything about our dearly departed Jose Barrero. No, you're right. Go ahead.
So back on the Ellie thing one real quick before we move on. Sure. I had said on here a couple times, and a lot of people share this opinion, that any argument that Ellie De La Cruz was not the best prospect in baseball would have been because of his extremely low floor, this perceived low floor that I also thought was a thing. Like, maybe he won't figure out major league break and stuff. Maybe he'll never get a great command of the strike zone. Like, he's overmatching AAA pitchers, but most of those people are AAA pitchers for a reason. I think that I was completely wrong. His floor is why he's such a special talent. Because with that speed and that awareness, the guy turns ground ball outs into singles. He turns seeing eye singles into doubles. And when he gets on first base, it's as good as a double.
Yeah.
And then he can be on first base and you can get a single to right field that he scores on. The guy is he's not human. I've never seen anything like it.
He's a comic book superhero. He just is. Yeah, there are three things. That's a great way to put it, first of all. There's three little data points I want to mention in support of that. But that's a way that I hadn't thought about, which is that, yeah, his perceived floor was always the thing. You know, yes, he had this high ceiling, but I think you're right. And here's the reason why. Twice this season, he's gotten infield singles on ground balls to first base. Okay? I don't know that I've ever seen that. Second, he had a ball that was just a flare it wasn't really a flare, but it was a ball that was hit to left center field.
Flare. It was a chip shot.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it didn't go to the wall, the one I'm talking about. And the left fielder fielded it. And first of all, no one else in the league would have gotten a double out of it. But it was, here's how much Ellie De La Cruz has changed the game. It was so clear that it was going to be a double immediately just because it was Ellie De La Cruz. Mm-hmm. The left fielder came up and threw it to third. He didn't even try to throw it to second. He was trying to keep Ellie De La Cruz from going to third on a ball that didn't even get to the fence. It just, I've never seen anything like it either. And I don't think, I feel every week when we talk about it, or every time I write about him, I feel like I'm just going over the top. That come on, don't hype this kid up this much. He's just a kid. But he's Eric Davis and Barry Larkin and, I don't know, Joey Votto maybe. He's all these guys wrapped up together. And I'm still dumbfounded. And I can't believe we get to watch this guy every day.
The tools are ridiculous. With just the speed alone, he has. If he hits only what would be singles for 99% of Major League Baseball players, if he only does that, if he hits ground balls and, you know, flares over the shortstop and second baseman's head, he was going to have a 300 batting average and a 400-plus slugging percentage because he's going to turn those singles into doubles. Like, his floor is like a pretty good baseball player.
His floor is probably an all-star shortstop. All-star shortstop. All-star shortstop is probably his floor.
Solid glove, too. He is not going to make him rookie mistakes out there at shortstop either. He hasn't gotten hot yet. His last game, he crushed every single ball that he saw. They swung out. Yeah. It was some bad luck, but maybe he's getting hot because he hasn't gotten hot yet. And when he does, if you think we're hyped already, just freaking wait. Electricity died, my friend. I am so pumped.
He hasn't gotten hot yet.
Exciting thing of my week.
I know, right? He hasn't gotten hot yet, and he's still the best hitter on the team. Quickly, because we have to move on, I do want to get your this will help us transition into your thoughts about Joseph Daniel Votto. If you want to hear my thoughts, you can go back and listen to our show from Tuesday where we had a lot of fun, or from Monday. But, you know, the Reds have this streak of having had a Hall of Famer on their roster for, I can't remember, it goes, you know, it's Joey Votto, presumably, you know, Barry Larkin, King Griffey Jr., you know, and then back to Big Red Machine guys, Tony Perez, then Pete Rose, and then, Pete Rose is not a guest, but, you know, Johnny Bench, all those. And it goes back even to Frank Robinson, and maybe even earlier than Frank Robinson. I'll have to look that up. But I've been saying for many years, even when the Reds are bad, you know what, we have something to watch here. You get a chance to watch Joey Votto practice his craft every day. And I've tried to always look at it that way. Like, when he's batting, it's must watch because we've never seen anything like him. Mm-hmm. And we won't see anything like him, probably. He's a unique bird in his own. But we talked about passing that torch. And so I hope this isn't Joey's last season. It may not be. But it might be. I don't know. I hope it's not. But if it is, or even if next year is, or the year after, we're seeing that torch being passed. But to another guy, who I'm not saying he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but every single time he bats, you have to look up from your phone. You mm-hmm. know, you have to pay attention. And that's the way it's been for Joey Votto for me his entire career. So talk about Votto finally comes up. He has the videos, you know, driving the bus and then wearing that sweet red suit and just classic Votto. Love that guy. And you think, well, he's back. But there was a lot of controversy online. Mm-hmm. Oh, he needs to retire. He's going to mess up the vibe and all that. Well, and so just talk about what he did that night and your thoughts about that whole thing.
Yeah, y'all went at length about it after it happened, so I won't go too deep. But I actually had a whole rant written up, bullet point by bullet point, that I wanted to make. I was going to say, turn on the TikTok camera. I'm ready to go. But I don't have to anymore because I wrote it before the game. And I saw the narrative. I saw what people were saying online. And it wasn't good. And it's everything I can to stay out of the comments on Twitter and stuff like that. But I did because zero-sum game. People were unnecessarily harsh about Joey. But he calls his press conference. People start speculating that maybe he's going to announce his retirement. I never thought he was going to announce his retirement. Not for a second.
No chance.
He handles it in typical, thoughtful, professional, entertaining Joseph Daniel Votto fashion. And then the game starts. And the energy's everywhere. And the crowd is going nuts. And I was scared about how he was going to be received. And he got the reception he deserved from about an hour before game time to about an hour and a half or two after game time, because they didn't leave. They were still chanting Joey, Joey, Joey hours after the game. So hats off, kudos to the folks of Cincinnati that showed up, did the right thing, and gave this man the reception that not only does he deserve, he's deserved for a long time and never gotten.
Yeah.
And as he said, a lot of ball players don't get that moment. And he did. And, man, I've never been more proud of Cincinnati Reds Nation in my entire 38 years of fanhood.
Yeah. No, you made the point where I was going to go. And so we got some negative feedback here that we agree to often this week, Nate. I don't know if you heard that. Some crotchety old guys told us that.
I don't agree with that statement.
We're going to get him back on here to be disagreeable very, very soon. But, yeah, that's the point I was going to make, which is that sometimes I forget that Twitter isn't real life. And this was a perfect example of it. We see people who say stupid nonsense all day long, not just about the Reds, but everything on Twitter. But I was, you know, you see, but for his career, it's not just been Twitter. It's been the mouth breathers that call into talk radio shows, saying all this, he walks too much. Of course, and we have to say they were parroting what they were hearing from the broadcast booth. And I don't often criticize the broadcast booth because
legends.
They are, yeah. Legends. Yeah, and you know, I've got to know some of them, but it is what it is. You gotta call it like it is, I guess. But I was worried because of all that coming into the game, and because we were hearing all this nonsense. I mean, I don't know why people feel like they have to drop into my Twitter timeline to tell me that Votto needs to retire. I don't, okay, fine. If that's what you think, you know, I'm not going to agree with you.
Do you think that Joe Twitter commenter is going to change your mind? It's like, you know, right. Chad just hasn't heard this one yet.
And do they think I'm going to fight with him? Because I don't do a lot of arguing on Twitter. It's just not worth it. I'm like, okay, buddy. I just ignore you or mute you. But yeah, he comes out to stretch and to warm up a little bit, and he gets an ovation. He comes up for the first time and gets a standing ovation. And got to say, they're playing the Colorado Rockies, the catcher whose name now escaped me, but he kind of steps out.
Diaz.
Yeah. He's like, steps out and gives Votto time to get that reception. Classy move.
Fantastic move.
Yeah. Votto, you know, taps his chest, doffs his cap or his helmet to the crowd, something Ted Williams refused to do, and proceeds to line out to center field.
Smoke a line drive.
104 mile per hour exit velocity. And so I'm like, uh-oh. It's kind of like that, you know, Happy Gilmore, I learned to putt. Joey is back to being Joey. And then, of course, it's the home run in his next at bat. And then the two-run single that gives the Reds the victory. And just what I loved when he came to the plate before the two and after it as well, the two-run single that gave the Reds the lead, and which, again, that could be more perfect. But the crowd at Great American Ballpark was chanting, Joey, Joey, Joey. And I've been watching him since day one. I do not remember a single other time Cincinnati fans giving him that kind of love and chanting his name like that. And I hope it was special for him. I hope he did enjoy it. He acted like he did enjoy it. And he talked a lot about what they owe to the fans. He's the best interview. He's perfect. He understands. But anyway, I was really happy with the fan base, really proud of the Reds fans.
A couple more things. One thing I really want to keep an eye on is that if you were looking around the stadium that day, and then if you kept the channel going during the post-game show, we always talk about the lost generation of Reds fans on this podcast. There was a lot of youth in the stands and in the crowd. There are a whole lot of young people that we might have thought were lost that are getting on board with this team. I mean, Joey Votto doing Instagram Reels and TikToks makes sense. That's going to reach a bigger subsect of, you know, under 30 Reds fans than we've ever thought about. So I'm keeping my eye on that. I love that the Utes are getting in on Joey Votto, what we've always known. And the other thing for me was, and this is just personal, that my wife, who literally gave her mom crap because her mom married her husband and allows him to watch Yankees games every night. Nobody's perfect. He's a Yankees fan. She finds out that Joey's making his return. And she says, "What time is it? We're watching, right?" And I said, "Yeah, of course." And then she sees the fanfare. She sees everything. What does she do the next day? She looks at me when she gets home from med school, you know, busy, tired, working in an emergency room for 12 hours. And she says, "When does our guy play?"
Oh, I love it.
And then she looks up because she's mostly paying attention to Joey at bat. She goes, "Is that our boy Ellie?"
See?
My wife, who could not possibly care less about baseball, is in on these baby Reds. And man, it's as a wise old sage once said, "What a time to be alive."
That's right. old is the operative word there. Yeah, no, I have a sort of a personal data point on that as well. To go back to your point about the Utes, I thought we might see a little bit of it with Jonathan India's emergence as a rookie. The hair and the flair, and you know, he's a fun player. And so I said a couple of years ago, I said we're gonna come to a point here in the very near future where there are more kids wearing Jonathan India jerseys than anything else at the stadium. And it may be true, but now you combine him with the LA De La Cruz's and the McLean's and Envato. But you know, my son, who, you know, he grew up around Great American Ballpark. We were there all the time. He's a Reds guy. Game was on all the time. And he's, you know, he and I have been to I don't have many games, a ton of games. Still loves going to the park. But the last few years, they've been awful. And he's just has other things that occupy his attention. You know, I don't know what happened when he started to become a teenager that got his attention, that put the Reds in the, but you can probably imagine what that was. But the last 2 weeks, first of all, I saw him start posting things on his Instagram story about the Reds and about Ellie and now about the win streak and about Joey. And he and I were texting about Votto that night because he was actually with his friends at something, couldn't watch it. So he was texting, "What's going on?" You know, and he couldn't believe what I was explaining to him. He's like, "Oh my, no way," you know. And so to see him kind of get back into it, that's to me a guy that drifted away because they stink and he has other things to do. And he actually said to me, "What's the deal? They're fun now." I said, "Yeah, I've been trying to tell you this team has some fun young talent. You wouldn't listen to me." He didn't believe me. He said, every time I'd say early in the year, like, "This team is actually fun this year." He's like, "Nah, they're trash. Reds are trash." He would say that. He would think he's getting on my nerves, but nah, Reds are trash. But he realizes now that they're not trash. They're fun. And that probably should be the title here. The Reds are not trash. I don't know if that'd be the title of this episode or not. Anyway, man, we said we were going to try to get through some topics here and then get into our viewer mail quickly. Instead, we've just been waxing poetic about these glorious first place America's team, Cincinnati Reds. Quickly, just about what happened during this the past week, the week that was. First of all, this the longest franchise winning streak since 1957. On the last team to win this many games, Reds team to win this game, many games in a row, Nate. David Bell's grandfather, Gus Bell, was on the roster of the last Reds team to win this many games. I love that little anecdote. So the Houston series, and there's a question about when was the moment. The Houston series was the moment for me where I was like, because we're at Houston, they're the world champs. Yeah. They have Dusty, but on Friday night, the Andrew Abbott experience, no runs allowed for his third consecutive start. First three starts, no runs allowed, just amazing. Thank goodness, because we've been talking about the big three on here all year long. They don't big three updates this week. They're all on the injured list.
Scrap that segment.
Oh, my goodness. Well, now's as good a time as
it'll be back. Yeah.
It will be back. Very briefly, the Reds are fun. They're playing well. How do they survive? The pitching is – the three pitchers they were counting on are now on the injured list. Fortunately, Abbott has come up, and fortunately, Ben Lively has mostly been cromulent. But and Brandon Williamson hasn't been as bad as we expected. Can they survive without acquiring more pitching? I mean, that would take a lot longer to discuss. But just very briefly, I mean, how nervous are you? Maybe is the way to frame it.
I'm not nervous at all. Some of that comes with just enjoying the ride. I mean, I don't have necessarily World Series aspirations for this team. Don't get me wrong. I'm not ruling it out. because optimism reigns over here in my household. But the team has proven that if the starter can go five innings and give up five or less runs, the offense will keep him in it. But the main reason I'm not that worried yet, granted, for the long run, yeah, of course, you need good starting pitching once you get to the playoffs. But in the meantime, the bullpen has been nails, man.
They have been.
The bullpen has been so good at limiting anything after the fifth inning to somewhere between zero and two runs. I wish I had a stat when the last time the bullpen gave up more than three runs in a game that wasn't already out of hand. I mean, we had a couple there where the Reds were up five, and you know, the Casey Legominas gave up a three-run bomb because they missed the injured list or something. But the bullpen's been so good that in this team keeps fighting that I'm not worried now. But if we get to the playoffs and these the big three, or at least two of the three, have not had several weeks of action, and we're going into a short series, then yeah, I'd be terrified then. But for now, I will not let that negativity creep into my mind.
Well, you're talking into the playoffs. I'm talking about if we get into July and we don't have some of these pitchers back, we may be in trouble. And Lodolo won't be back for a little while, but the emergence of Andrew Abbott has been good, and that's been a help in the absence of Green and Ashcraft and Lodolo. But it's really it sort of puts it into stark. The picture is very clear that we don't have pitching. The Reds, I say we, I never do that. I just did it. The Reds don't have pitching. And I'm hopeful they can kind of hang on, at least till we get Hunter Green back. And Graham Ashcraft will be back here soon.
Are the odds that – what would your reaction be if I would have told you preseason, if I would have, you know, came to visit you from the future and said, the Reds are going to be above 500, winning the division in June, and also you're going to miss Chase Anderson?
I never would have believed it, but it's kind of true. It's kind of true. That's great. No, here's the thing. I'm not worried about it. Everybody's always like, oh, should we be worried that this has happened? I get that question. Like, should we be worried that X, Y, or Z? I'm not worried because, kind of like you said, we're playing on house money here. You know, yeah. this is the 2009 Reds, you know, is what I expected. I thought next year might be the year they could. I think it was what everyone expected. And if you tell me that Nick Kroll and anyone in the Reds front office believed it was anything this year, I won't believe you, because they did nothing to improve this team. If they thought this was, right, we were really this close. But it's just like the Reds just hit the jackpot in that all these kids are already ahead of schedule, yeah, you know, and that's great. And, you know, it's probably a testament to the Reds player development. You know, I mean, I think that it's a full organization success, and kudos to everyone that had a hand in that. We're critical, but we also, you know, we've been, we've praised Nick Kroll when he's deserved it, certainly recently. And so I'm not worried. I hope they can hang on till we get some of the pitchers back and the Reds can continue to play well, because it's still a bad division, but the Reds are genuinely playing good baseball right now, fun baseball. And so I'm not worried about anything. I'm just resolving to enjoy every second of it.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all you can do. For long-term stuff, Nick Lodolo has me a little concerned. Like, that's not – the news hasn't gotten better. We get Graham Ashcraft back this weekend, it seems. Hunter Green maybe missing one or two starts in the 15-day DL, IL, you know, retroactive to whenever. But as far as, like, long-term health of those guys, the Lodolo thing scares me a little bit. But other than that, I'm just – Let's let the good times roll. There's a guy in Double A, Connor Phillips, that I got my eye on. I think we could see him as early as August. My guy Bryce, who watches those prospects, tells me that.
Well, Phillips is a guy that with a high ceiling, that again, ahead of schedule. He's gonna be in Triple A soon. Pitching very well. And I don't care about the kids, you know, I don't ever talk about the prospects, but Lodolo, yeah, I mean, there's something to watch there. Green, it's his hip. So, and this is what caused him to miss a start early this year, but it's his hip, it's not his arm. And so let's get him healthy. Get him healthy. Let him take as much time as he needs to be healthy. So, but that's an issue. Quickly, more back to Houston, because I want to say Saturday was the Will Benson game. 3-for-3, a triple, two walks, on base five times, two RBIs, and that was the game where the Reds got over 500 for the first time, and then they swept the Astros on Sunday in an extra innings victory. Monday, the return of Joey Votto won game one and moved into first place. So Joey Votto gets back and the Reds move into first place. Game two, 10th straight win, 28,291 in attendance. So yeah, that's the first real attendance game when people are starting to get a little excited. And then TJ Friedl that day.
It was also a rainy Tuesday night.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know. And so there's always this thing about, oh, well, the school's out now, so the attendance, it does always go up this time. But still,
sure.
You know, you don't generally get 15, 20,000 more fans than you usually get. Friedel hit a three-run homer in the second inning, four hits that game, and then game three. Jake Fraley with that home run, Reds' 11th win in a row. Roster move for the week. Let me just run through these really quick. The Reds traded Joel Kuhnel to the Houston Astros. Nate, do you miss Joel Kuhnel?
You know, my wife had to cuddle me in bed in the fetal position as I cried myself to sleep just last night.
I thought so. Here's the one that I do want to just briefly touch on because it surprises me, but also encourages mm-hmm. me in some ways. Will Myers, the only free agent, really, that the Reds signed in the offseason. Will Myers, and it was a guy that I was happy they signed. I had no issues with that. Designated for assignment. And it's the right move. So, again, mm-hmm. kudos to Nick Kroll. It's absolutely the right move. He doesn't have a place here with this team. And when Encarnacion Strand gets here, he's definitely not going to have a place. But that's a thing that the Reds, the last 12 months, the Reds have cut bait on Will Myers, who wasn't making a ton of money, but he was their free agent signing. And they cut bait on Mike Moustakas, who is making a ton of money. Yeah. But they cut bait on both of them because they didn't fit with this organization. That's something they would not have done in the past. And so, again, you know, as we get more data, we change our opinions and I'm encouraged continually. There's a lot of things I don't trust about Nick Kroll. He did, you know, he just completely punted on pitching in the offseason. No depth whatsoever. And I shouldn't even mention that because that may actually even be I don't want to even say anything good about the Castellanis, but generally Castellanis have to sign off on those things. They have in the past. I don't know if Bob's still having to sign off. I know for a fact in the past, Castellanis had to sign off on just jettisoning them. And
you don't get to write checks without ownership having some sort of say so.
Yeah. So, boy, I said something almost mildly nice about Bob Castellini, and I'm going to have to go take a shower now after this podcast. Yeah. But anyway, I thought it was interesting that they actually cut bait on Will Myers. I thought that was an interesting move just because of what it said about where this team is and what their thinking is.
Yeah. Couple quick thoughts on that. One, I could envision a world where they keep him around a little bit had he been hitting well on his rehab assignment. He looked really bad in AAA. Great signing at the time. It was time to go. He had a place in this roster as long as he played his way into it, and he did not. And the young guys forced him out, and that's totally fine. Wish him the best. Please go crush baseball somewhere else. Great guy. Was in the clubhouse for Joey Votto's return. Like, nothing but good things to say about him. It just didn't work out. One thing that I really liked about it, especially as we hope in the coming months and definitely looking forward to the next offseason, the Reds want to get some guys. And I was really, really critical of the way they handled Luis Sessa, the way they used him and abused him, in my opinion. Let's force you to be a starter, even though he wanted to, sure. But none of us, not a single Reds fan, thought that was in the best interest of the team. They didn't get starting pitching depth, so they ran him out there every 5 days.
Yeah, they were forced to because they didn't go get any pitch because they didn't get any pitching.
In a free agent year. So he performed terribly in a walk year. And then they just cut him. They had a bad start and they cut him instead of ever even trying him out in that sort of long relief role that he's most suited for. So I was really frustrated then. They could have done a similar thing with Will Myers. They could have force fed him to us just to try to get him for something down the road. But I choose to believe that this is a scenario where they were like, hey man, it wasn't happening. Instead of you coming up here and struggling on the big league squad for a few weeks and then us having to make a more public situation, we're just going to do it now a little more quietly and let you go and carve your own path wherever that may be. I think they did right by Will Myers in this situation. So I'm critical on the one hand. I want to be, you know, giving praise here because I think they did the right thing.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And again, I'm never happy about someone losing their job. Will Myers seems like a really righteous dude, as they would say at the latest Dead & Company concert. Seems like a great guy, and so I'm not happy when anyone loses their job. But I think it's also a function of this. The Will Myers signing at the time, I think, was a good signing. It was the type of signing of the Reds.
We both predicted he was going to lead the team in wins above replacement this year.
Yeah, yeah. He, you know, it's the type of thing we've seen from the Reds. Let's see if we can get a guy he needs to rebuild his career a little bit, bring him into Great American mm-hmm. Ballpark, and hopefully he does, and you trade him away at the deadline maybe or whatever. We hope for Brandon Drury out of that. It didn't work out because he didn't perform. But in addition to that, he certainly didn't perform. But he would have had a longer leash, I think, if not for the fact that, because before the season, the outfield was a big issue, if you recall, mm-hmm. with this team. But what's happened in the meantime is TJ Friedl, TJ Hopkins, I guess, is a depth move, but he's been, would you rather have TJ Hopkins or Will Myers?
Worthy of a look.
Right. And Will Benson. So, you know, all of a sudden you've got some legitimate outfield. And then, you know, whatever you think about Nick Senzel. Nick Senzel's Nick Senzel. I love him unconditionally.
Ray Fraley.
And that too. Thank you. He's never been healthy. I didn't even think about him. But, yes, he's been – when he's healthy, he's mashed for the Reds.
And it's also worth throwing out there, now that Joey Votto's back and maybe another prospect knocking on the door that we'll get to a little bit later in the viewer mail questions, Spencer Steer's playing some outfield.
Yeah.
Like, you got to find room for these guys. And kudos to the Reds front office for prioritizing the development of their young talent over trying to get a trade chip for a lotto ticket with Will Myers.
Yeah. Or just keeping the guy on the roster because you're paying him more money than some of these other guys, which is something they have legitimately done over the years.
Yeah. And I want to throw this out there because this was a thing on Twitter today for whatever reason. Just because we are happy about the Reds and praising some of the moves that are being made, I still want the Castellanos to sell the team.
Oh my gosh, please.
I don't want that to be in doubt. I would still far prefer another entity own the Reds. Okay. Glad we got that out of the way.
Oh my goodness. Sell the team, Bob. Yes. Not even close. Can you imagine this fun young core with an ownership that you knew was willing to go all in and really supplement it? So I don't want to have that conversation today because
we'll get to it.
Well, no, here's why I don't want to have that conversation. If you're watching on YouTube, baby, this week it's good vibes only. I'm having so much fun. I've been beaten down over the years. That's why. But, Nate, I think probably, let me look at our outline here. Yeah, let's just do this. Let's go to viewer mail, can't we? No, we can't. How are we not going to mention that the Reds called up some of our favorite players? Well, first of all, let me say this. When Votto, we mentioned he was on the DL, the IL. I keep making that mistake. But when Joey Votto returned, that's when Hunter Green went on the injured list. Mm-hmm. The Reds called up Alan Busenitz.
Gary Busenitz.
Yes, no, Boosie Buns, Busenitz. Silvino Braccio, loved him on The Sopranos.
He was great.
Loved him. Yeah, he was fantastic. And put Casey Legumina on the 15-day injured list with right shoulder pain and optioned Stuart Fairchild to Louisville. So a couple of relievers, whatever. I just want to mention the transactions as we usually
do. Twitter got a little bit hot about that Stu Fairchild.
Explain that
situation.
To
me. I will only say that when Reds Twitter is arguing vehemently over the 26th man on the roster, and it's not based on BS, but based on who can most effectively help the ball club compete for a division title.
Yeah.
I'm a lot more willing to entertain it. Super Chubb will be back. And he will be back soon once some things work themselves out, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's been pretty good. He's been pretty good. But he's been 26th man.
He's been cromulent.
Yeah. He's been fine. For that role, he's been fine.
Oh, yeah. For like a fourth or really fifth outfielder. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, Stuart Fairchild could be a fifth outfielder on a good team like the Reds. So, he'll be back. I don't know. You know, his team, his Wake Forest Demon Deacons went out to the College World Series in Omaha and lost. They're garbage. Any team that goes to the College World Series and loses, get out of here. But I think that we don't need to spend more time on Stuart Fairchild, except I want to say that our buddy Carlos Guevara actually said something smart, and this does not happen often. Okay. So it I had to stand up and take a couple walks around the block. I was kind of short of breath. I saw he actually said something smart. He said, Stuart Fairchild's a 4A player. Relax. And he kind of is. He's that fifth outfielder, a perfectly fine fifth outfielder, but a guy you send up and down, and you know, he's depth. He's not a starter. And that's not a criticism of Stuart Fairchild. It's who he is.
And he's a 95 OPS plus. So he is quite literally slightly below league average.
Yeah. But with his speed, defense, he can help a team. He's just not a starter. So Nate, we got to get into some viewer mail. We had so many good viewer mail questions this week. We had resolved we were going to get into them quickly. And we're 45 minutes in, Nate. Yikes.
I blame Joey Votto.
Yes. Everything's Joey Votto's fault, as we've heard for many years. So but before we get into viewer mail, Nate, we've got a new member of the Beer League softball team. I'm always excited every time. The Beer League softball team, for those of you that have been listening for a while, you know what that is. But we see our download numbers and our views on YouTube going up. So we know some of you are just getting here for the first time. That's good. You're welcome here. We have a great time. We have a great family. The Beer League softball team is our family at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. That's patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. And if you join at a certain level, you know, there's goodies there. The level that I think everyone should join is a $2 level. But if you don't, look, this show's free. We're putting it on YouTube. We're putting it in your audio feeds every week for free. It's free. There's some goodies that we do for the Patreon family because they're better than you. No, that's not what I was trying to say. It's not what I was trying to say. No, we love, if you don't want to subscribe or you can't afford to subscribe, it's fine. We're going to be free. We're going to continue to be free. We've been giving you, this is for our 486th free episode. We do it because we love this team. But if you join over there, you know, one of the perks is you get a spot on our Beer League softball team. And this week, it's Jacob Figgins. Jacob Figgins. First of all, thank you, Jacob, for joining. Nate, have you seen Jacob on our Slack channel yet? I don't know that he's he has the invite. I know he got the invite.
I don't think so. We're waiting.
Jacob, we want to talk to you. Get into that Slack channel. And if you have questions about how to do it or anything, you should have gotten an invite. If not, let me know. But welcome to the family. Welcome to the crew. Mm-hmm. Now, as we always do, when you join, you get a spot on our Beer League softball team. And so, Nate, I'm going to ask you, Jacob Figgins, what position is Jacob Figgins playing on our team?
I don't always feel the answer right away. Sometimes I got to think about it a little bit. And sometimes it comes to me after, you know, a few moments of reflection. But this one came to me right away. Jacob Figgins is that rare breed of Beer League softball player. Somebody that every team needs, but not every team gets. He's the guy that is happy being the catcher. Because the catcher doesn't get a ton of action in Beer League softball. But you know what the catcher does? Catcher has two responsibilities. One, talk the most trash of anybody on the field. And two, ready to throw blows if the other team gets a little too mouthy. So Jacob Figgins is our enforcer.
Oh, that is so funny. Because, yeah, go back to my son here, but when my son played travel ball, 1 year, they had a catcher whose name was Jacob. And he was the best kid. And my son got to talk to him again like a couple weeks ago. And he ended up not playing baseball in high school until his senior season. He did, you know, whatever. But for that 1 year, he was such a great kid. And he wasn't really ready to throw down necessarily, but he was funny. The kids all loved him. And so I saw Jacob. I thought, that's him. He's the catcher that we all love. You've added this element of he's kind of the enforcer. I like it. Jacob, you're the catcher on our Beer League softball team. First question from viewer mail. And again, these viewer mail questions come from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. There, if you're watching on YouTube, it's at the bottom and now it's gone. First question comes from Rich Thompson. Gentlemen, with the ascension of Matt McClain, Ellie De La Cluz, yes, that's his name, Spencer Steer, and apparently TJ Friedel and Jake Fraley seizing primary outfield positions, it appears that Kevin Newman and Nick Senzel are now battling it out to assume the mantle of super utility player. With that said, do you think there's room on the roster for two such titans? And if there can only be one, he says in quotes, there can only be one, who will claim the prize of being the next immortal, the next Kyle Farmer for this Reds team? And so I didn't understand most of the things he had in quotation marks there. And it must be something to do with Highlander, he says in his postscript. Highlander. Do you know what Highlander is, Nate?
I'm aware that it was a show.
So the next immortal Kyle Farmer for this team. I'm going to go ahead and as a corollary to that, I'm going to go down to another question that's later from Hooper Powell. Hooper Powell asks this. Exactly. The only thing I really... Hooper, our stand-up comedy guy here. Love Hooper. The only thing I really want to know is how mad Kyle Farmer is that he's not on this team. So let's take those two questions together. How mad is Kyle Farmer that he's not on this team? And who's the next Kyle Farmer? I'm going to take them in reverse order. I actually feel kind of bad for Kyle Farmer because Kyle Farmer gave his heart and soul for some bad Reds teams. I mean, he played hard. He was overrated from the beginning and people loved him too much because he was that scrappy white guy that Reds fans love. But he wouldn't have messed up the vibe like Joey Votto did. I feel bad for Kevin Farmer Kyle Farmer, Kyle Newman, Kevin Farmer, same guy. I do feel bad that he's not here. I bet he does. I bet he feels bad too. Although he's, he got hurt, but, I don't know that I see another Kyle Farmer. Nick Senzel's not going to be that guy because he was too highly touted to become that kind of guy that Reds fans love. Kevin Newman could. And although Kevin Newman has been, you know, he's come up in some big moments. He's not played well, but he's played just well enough to justify being on the roster. He doesn't need to be hitting leadoff ever again, but it seems like every time he hits leadoff, he hits a home run or something. So I guess I would say maybe Newman, but I don't know that there is another. And here's the reason why I don't think there's another Kyle Farmer type. Because in the lineup now, we have too much talent. We have actually talented players. Whereas there's not going to be a guy like a Kyle Farmer who's going to play too many innings. So anyway, that's go wherever you want to go with those, Nate.
Also, we'll attack this in reverse order. I have some Twins fans in my life, and let me tell you, Kyle Farmer's doing fine. They love them some Kyle Farmer in Minnesota. He is getting the exact same sort of love in many that he was in Cincy. So he's doing okay. As far as the other one goes, I am pretty torn on this because Nick Senzel has more positional flexibility. He has that pedigree, which is important, I guess. Kevin Newman's been better. Kevin Newman, I agree, should never, ever bat leadoff. This was my entire gripe of the Kevin Newman era. But if Kevin Newman is your number nine hitter against righties, and you can put him anywhere you want to against lefties, because both these guys mash lefties. The big difference for me, and trust me, if I got to wave my magic wand, Nick Senzel outperforms Kevin Newman and has a spot on this team for years to come. I'm extremely pro Nick Senzel. But if I'm just talking about what I personally feel at this moment that this team needs more from a skill set, I look at how Nick Senzel has a handful fewer at-bats than Kevin Newman and almost double the strikeouts. Kevin Newman in your nine hole, not striking out, playing adequate defense and mashing the lefties was not on my bingo card. But I like what he's bringing to the table right now.
Well, I think we're going to talk about those two in a later question, so I'm not going to say what I was getting ready to say here, but yeah. I'll hold it for a few minutes. Next question comes from James Urban. James Urban, by the way, celebrated his 65th birthday this week. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, James. Always happy to have you around. He's going to yell at me in the Slack channel for calling him old again. He's not old. He's actually very, very young. I think he's like 12, but I like to pretend that he's old. Also, do I get to take off next week, Nate, since it's my birthday next week?
Sure. I got this.
Is that how that works? You took off last week. James Urban asked, have we signed Aroldis Chapman yet? Now, I'm gonna admit this is something I hadn't thought about until our buddy Tim Daniel, host of Late Night Reds here at the Riverfront. And if you're not hanging out on Late Night Reds on Sunday nights, you're missing out. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I don't really like Tim personally. Don't tell him I said this. He won't listen to this. But, man, he does a good job with that show, and they have so much fun. And every time I'm on there, I have fun with him. And you get to hang out with Pat Magooch.
Legend.
Just for the record, I do like Tim. Tim, please don't. Tim's not listening to this. He's not going to listen to our show. I listen to his, though. But he's the one that mentioned Aroldis Chapman first. And I know some people have some reasons they don't want Chapman back. Okay. Just strictly baseball. Aroldis Chapman makes so much sense with this team. It is crazy. You're right. You said it earlier. The bullpen's been great, but
they're worked.
They're worked. How much do you want Busenitz and Legumina
in there? No Busenitzes.
Exactly.
Busenai.
Busenai. What's the plural of Busenitz? Trivia time. Trivia time, Nate. Who leads the Reds in wins for pitchers?
I do know this one.
You know, I know you know this one.
Yeah. Who's second in Major League Baseball, or like the entire National League or something like that? Ian freaking Jabeau.
Jabeau is 8-1. I adore. That's my favorite thing about this team. That's that particular stat. Ian Jabeau is
the only guy that when he gets to the mound, I'm like, oh, got some strong David Weathers vibes right now.
I know, right? I always feel like he's going to run over and maybe grab a Coney or something between innings. Not
like him more.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's true. Some hateful things said about Mike Moustakas this week, by the way, in his return to Cincinnati. Yeah, I don't know. I don't object to any of it. But Aroldis Chapman on this team, this week should tell you why this makes sense. The Reds bullpen's been pretty good, as Nate noted. But Alexis Diaz was gassed this week. He was absolutely exhausted. And he's been great.
Twice.
Yeah. Alexis Diaz, first of all, is – we don't give him enough love here. We need to correct that in future episodes of this show. Well, there you go. Puerto Rico. We don't give Alexis Diaz enough love. He's like one of the best relievers in baseball. But he doesn't have enough help. And the Reds are relying on him too much. And he got tired. If you have a Chapman. Now, if Chapman comes back, he's not your closer. No way. But Chapman as your lefty setup guy. Alexis Diaz as the righty. I don't know what it would take to get Chapman. He had gave an interview.
Let's go one further. You alternate Buck Farmer and Lucas Sims, who's been nails
as your setup guys.
16 and 7 inning guys.
Left and right, lefty right.
That is a disgusting back of the bullpen.
Well, another guy that we really haven't talked much about this season, because you know he's always injured so much. But Lucas Sims he's 28 games now. Lucas Sims has been nails, 2.6 ERA. I mean, Lucas Sims has been good. So that's a great point that I hadn't thought about in that context, which is that there's your setup tandem. Sims and Chapman, lefty-righty, and Diaz at the back end, all of a sudden, I mean, it's not the nasty boys, but they're pretty good.
Listen, don't sleep on my boy Buck Farmer, man. You know how I love whip, and he's got a .9 whip.
Like, well, I don't trust Buck Farmer, and you're not going to convince me otherwise.
The beard.
Hold the beard right. Is good.
He is the violent beard. Out on that mound. Buck Farmer is a dude. Maybe not the dude, but a dude.
Well, he's been better this year than he was last year. No question about it. He's been kind of good. And by the way, sorry I shaved my beard this week, Nate. Sorry.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah. So I don't know what it would take to get Aroldis Chapman, but doesn't it make a lot of sense?
Probably not a ton.
Well, and I started to say it. He gave an interview this week where he was like, "I would love to pitch for my first team again." You know, he's ready for it. Of course, he's in Kansas City. Who wouldn't want to come to Cincinnati if you're in Kansas City?
We're all about all right. Second chances here at the Riverfront.
Well, that's true. That is true. That's actually my life. My life's motto.
That's why we gave Tim Daniel a podcast.
Exactly. He needed a second chance in the podcasting sphere. You know, he earned his second chance though. He earned it.
We love Tim.
Love you, Tim. Sorry, we're talking about you so much. Hope you don't listen. Seth Shaner asks this: getting to 20 consecutive wins. First of all, I love that. I love the way that's framed. It's still a long way away, but this Reds team has given off some serious Moneyball A's vibes, except that team had Zito, Hudson, and Mulder pitchers, for those of you out there in Middletown. So wouldn't this be even more of a storybook streak? Amazing, I say. Well, the Moneyball A's, frankly, were crafted by a genius general manager who knew what he was doing. Not saying Nick Kroll doesn't know what he's doing, but Nick Kroll didn't put this team together to be good this year like this, which is why he didn't get Zito, Mulder, and Hudson. He didn't get any pitching to help. So, so it would be more of a storybook, but I'm here for it. Please, 20 wins. I'll take it.
Yeah. I'm glad that he at least brought up Zito, Hudson, and Mulder because everybody loves talking about this Moneyball team and the way they cheated the league and won because of Chris Pratt, Hatterberg, while forgetting that they had three aces and the NL MVP or the AL MVP, if I'm not mistaken, Miguel Tejada, shortstop, just raking.
Right.
They were a really good ball club. This would be a much better story, but this is kind of where I have landed with Nick Kroll, is that I want to give him all the praise in the world for the moves he makes. He's made some great, great, great moves. Turning Tyler Mahle into Spencer Steer and CES, who we've barely talked about this episode, we will a little bit in a minute, was incredible. Getting the returns he got for the established good players that the Reds had, the Luis Castillo's of the world, amazing. Getting Jake Fraley back is looking pretty good now. Can he do the rest? Can he finish the job? I've now publicly said I want to see him, let him cook, let him do his thing.
Yeah.
I'll give him all the credit in the world if he finishes the job. He's proven he can get young talent. Can he get major league talent to fill up this roster? So we'll see. Can't wait. I'm freaking excited about it, Chad.
Well, that's the thing here at the Riverfront. You know, we may be wrong occasionally. Okay, whatever. We may be. Probably not. But if we are, we admit we're wrong. We're wrong. But we also try to call it like it is. Nick Kroll had a bad start as Reds GM. And maybe that wasn't all his fault. And we all also acknowledge that. He's had some peaks and he's had some valleys as well. But what I worry about is this next phase, because we've always talked about, yes, at some point the kids are going to get here. The Reds have to finish it. And they've never finished it by getting the players filling in the holes.
Well, we're going to find out, because they arrived a year early.
But so what I worry about, I'm not sure we will. And here's where I will disagree with you slightly, which is that it may not be his fault. It may not be his fault. You know, if the Reds don't fill in those holes, in the past, the reason they haven't filled in those holes is because the Castellanis refused to permit it, refused to kind of go that extra step to finish the job. I hope we're in a new day, because I'm just having fun and I want to believe. I want to believe. James Scott Pyle. First of all, you got to respect somebody that goes by three names. I really have great respect for that. How would you rank the games from June 2023? First of all, if you told me there were games from June 2023 that we'd be able to rank before the season started, no way. In terms of the likelihood that they would get included in the next Big 50. Nate, that's the Big 50, the Men and Moments that made the Cincinnati Reds. Second edition coming out soon. And Chris Garber and I are working hard as we speak. Well, not literally as we speak, because I'm on a podcast now. And making some changes, adding some things, taking some things out. So here are the candidates. The Ellie De La Cruz debut, which included the Mark McClain walk-off. Yes, the Mark McClain walk-off. Ellie game number two, which had the Benson walk-off and had Ellie's first home run as well. The Ricky Karcher game, which we're just forgetting about it, since the Reds are actually good and
never
dumb stuff like that doesn't make as much impact anymore. Or the Joey Votto return. How would you rank these games in terms of the likelihood that we get included in the next Big 50? I will say this. The Joey Votto return will get mentioned. It's not going to get another chapter, but it's going to be mentioned, I think. I say that, but Chris Garber and I haven't actually talked about whether it will get in there. But I can't imagine we won't figure out a way to sneak that in. The Karcher game's probably not going to make it into the Big 50. So we'll eliminate that one. I think Ellie game number two with his first home run and Benson's walk-off, I think that's less likely than Ellie's debut and McClain's walk-off, because I think Ellie and McClain, I love Benson. You know, I'm all in on Benson. So the way I would rank that is Votto's return is definitely going to get included if Chris will actually let me make any decisions this time around. Ellie's debut along with McClain's walk-off might, because we're talking about how to craft a chapter around, you know, young players, good young players, maybe rookies of the year, things like that. We're trying to figure out how to add some of these good young players in. That's number two. And the other two are not going to get in there probably, unless I go off the reservation and just decide we have to have a chapter on Will Benson. If that happens, maybe. So, okay. Anyway, Nate, I'm not gonna let you answer that one, because I'm letting you have no input on the next edition of the Big 50, but you get to do the next one. Joey Gaudisa Can you think of a specific moment during this fun run where you thought something special is brewing?
Yeah, it was mentioned in that last question. For me, it was the Benson walk-off.
Me too.
100%. I said it right after that episode, the very next episode. It was the most electric moment of definitely this season for me, but at least 10 years. I mean, it's up there for me, the all-time Reds fan moments, because I was sitting on the couch. Wife was watching her thing. I always had the Reds game on my phone because it's 2023 and we can watch games on our phone, which is wild. And I like just started laughing out loud. This moment happened to continue this streak. And he did what I want. You saw it in World Baseball Classic. You see it in college baseball all the time. The energy, the enthusiasm, the bat spike, the team losing their freaking minds. I was like, oh my goodness, this is not just a flash in a pan. This is the real deal.
That was the moment. It was. Again, not that I thought, oh gosh, this team's going to the playoffs as soon as that happened. But it was, you know, Ellie hit the home run, you know, early in the game to the, you know, the last row, almost out of the stadium. And it ends like that. And some of that's because I've been a Will Benson homer all year.
But like, also, he's like maybe the most likable guy in the entire major freaking league.
Isn't he though?
He's just wonderful, wonderful human being.
And his response after that, you know, throwing the bat, and he was just—you could tell it was a release. I've talked about this, I guess, so I don't need to go into it. It was a release for him. He's like, I struggled so bad that I got sent to AAA, but I worked. I kept working, and now I'm back. And look at this—I get my moment finally, and I'm, and the way the rest of his teammates were so happy for him, you can tell they like him because, like you say, mm-hmm. he seems like such a. Every interview with that guy just seems like a likable, good dude, a guy that you want to cheer for. And so once Joey Votto departs from this team, which I hope is in 4 or 5 years from now, Will Benson's going to be my favorite Red. I love that guy unconditionally, but that's my level. Okay, Jordan Salisbury. Hello to the Dotson boys. This isn't a question as much as it is a declaration. We need lots more of these non-questions so we can get through this episode. I was reading the comments community on Bleacher Report. Jordan, love you, buddy, but I'm not sure that's a good idea. Leading up to Joey Votto's return game, I'm still surprised to see how many supposed Reds fans had nothing but negativity to say about the guy. I loved how they had to eat crow as he looked like a 2021 Joey Votto, but where does all this Joey Votto hate come from in the community? Well, we already talked about it, so we don't need to go too much deeper into it. I think it's way less than we think because we see it online. People don't want to yell online. It's way less than that. It's a tiny margin of Reds fans.
The people that hate Joey Votto are the same people that comment on girls' Instagram accounts that are 30 years younger than them saying that they're looking good, boo.
looking good, boo. What's funny is actually I said that on one of your Instagram posts recently, Nate. So maybe I need to reevaluate my strategy. It was true. Looking good. And where it comes, again, we've talked about it. A lot of it comes from, I hate to say it, but I've resolved to tell the truth here. It comes from the broadcast booth for the last 15 years. It does. I like the
not
current
anymore,
broadcast.
Man. That booth is fun right now.
Well,
Larkin's improved. If he's not good, he's better than he was. Better than the previous years. To me. John Sadak is all of us.
Some people hate John Sadak. And I'm like, dude, that dude is having fun.
I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all. To work with he has to work with and keep the enthusiasm. When he watched that umpire in the Wednesday night's game, which is atrocious, and then he calls things on Luke Bailey. Another high strike, like 6 inches above the zone. And John Sadak, who's typically pretty even, just goes, oh, come on, man.
I love it. I love it.
Great. And the Cowboys been letting loose in the radio booth. Cowboy has been crushing it.
I want to talk briefly about the Cowboy, but first about Sadak. He became a Reds legend on Ellie's first home run. That call.
Yeah.
That ball had a family. I mean, it's just a... incredible call. No, Sadak's a good guy. I've gotten to know him just a little bit. Just one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Maybe at some point I'll be won't be toxic to the Reds and maybe he'll come on the show. I shouldn't have said that out loud. I got to edit that out. John, you're great. Love you. Don't blame you. Jeff Brantley. You can go back in the archives of this show, as I'm sure most of you do all the time. And I was pretty critical of Brantley early on in his career. It's because this whole cowboy thing, it felt forced in the beginning, like it was his shtick, you know. But he has sort of settled into being himself a little bit more. He still has the cowboy stuff, but he's a really good analyst. He's genuinely good, especially when he's talking about pitching. I learn something from him all the time. And so, and Tommy Thrall is Tommy Thrall the greatest play-by-play guy in radio history? No. But, buddy, he's
very good.
He's good. He's good. It's a hard job, first of all, and I have no complaints about him. Anyway, I love Tommy Thrall. Don't know Tommy Thrall at this point. Maybe I need to see if he'll come on here. Probably not, because I'm toxic. But sell the team, Bob. But anyway, that's where we are. Next question. Two more here, and we'll get out. Kyle Kapler. Here's one we've been waiting to talk about. How do you fit Christian Encarnacion Strand onto this team? Do you force him in, wait for injury, or see him as a trade chip? Kyle says, sell the farm, Nick. So how do you fit CES on this team? Do you think he should be here now? I guess is the way I would ask that question.
Well, the answer to that is a firm yes. You want the best 26 guys on the roster trying to get the most wins that you can get. That's kind of been our thing here at the Riverfront, is prospects are great, but only so far as they can help the big league team. And exactly. All we care about is a winner in Cincinnati. So the answer of should he be here? Yes. We have three catchers. I like all three of the catchers. But the easy answer is you have one less. You pencil CES into DH 5 days a week and you figure out the rest. You can't convince me that bat doesn't help. Even if the Reds have shown a little more pop the last week or two, they didn't show the pop for the previous 2 months. CES needs to be up, and I think the easy way to do it is trading either Kirk Casale or Luke Maley. So that's it for me.
And I'd be surprised if the Reds have, if Nick Kroll hasn't been on the phone trying to see if Casale or Maley, if anyone wants them. I don't know if they will. Don't expect much in return. But that's an easy move. If you need a roster spot, I like what Maley's done this year. I like what Casale does. You know, he hasn't hit that well, but man, I love what he does with the pitchers. And if I had to choose, I'd keep Casale, even though he's not hit as well as Maley. I think I'd keep him as my backup catcher just because the guy is, he's a receiver. He's a great backup catcher.
It's exactly what you want out of a backup catcher. And yes. He was catching all of Hunter Green's outings when he went on that little hot streak, which is not nothing.
And he also caught Ricky Karcher. Gave some great interviews about that.
Deserves to stay for that alone.
No, so that's an easy. There's a roster spot if you want one. You don't need three catchers. At this point, frankly, having three catchers is a luxury because the Reds have so many options that you really can't play Tyler Stevenson at first base or DH as much as you had planned originally. Mm-hmm. Because you got Joey Votto back now and Spencer Steer's here. And you know, Jonathan Indy's playing some DH, and because of all the kids that are here. And when Christian Encarnacion Strand gets here, Encarnacion Steer, as someone called him in the preseason, he'll play some DH as well. That's the easy. So whether should he be here? I think yes, but I'm always kind of, I want to defer to the player development guys with the Reds. They have more information than I do. Maybe there's something in particular he needs to work on that I don't know, but he makes this team better. I do think he makes this team better. And so where do you play him? He's mostly a first baseman DH. He has played some third base. He can play there, not going to be great there, but he could. Mostly first base DH, but you still, a guy like with a bat like that, you get him in the lineup. That's the thing about Spencer Steer. When Votto returned, everybody's like, Steer's playing great at first. Why would you change? Make a change. What people don't understand about Spencer Steer is that Spencer Steer's a pretty good athlete. Mm-hmm. And Spencer Steer was defensive player of the year in the Pac-12. Or he was on the all-defensive team as the third baseman in the Pac-12 in college. He's played third base. He played he's played shortstop. He's played second base. He's played first base. He's now played in the outfield. Spencer Steer has a bat that's going to play in a big league lineup, but he can play around the diamond. And that may be, the last couple of years, I've been thinking, can Nick Senzel be this like super utility guy? And the truth is, it's probably Spencer Steer. You like a guy to have his position and plug him into that position. But the Reds have too many guys. And I cannot believe we're saying this. It's amazing. So it's okay to play Spencer Steer all over the place. It's okay to give Jonathan Mea a day or two off. Let him DH. It's okay to, there are enough with the DH now, there are enough spots for these guys. But you're going to have to make a decision at the catcher spot. And I think I probably cut bait on Maley, but is what it is. All right. Last question. This comes from our buddy Rex Scott. Chad and Nate, as much fun as we're having now, winning is more likely to keep happening if we address our pitching woes. True, as we've already discussed. Please share your ideas for how to beef up the staff through call-ups, trades, guys return from injuries, etc. Also, what would you change about how Bell and his coaches handle the pitching staff? Well, I'll begin with the second question. How would I change what I think they're doing the best with what they've got? I don't have any objections with how David Bell and Derek Johnson and the coaches are handling the pitching staff. I mean, there's a bunch of people screaming that Ian Jabot was in the other night, but Diaz was not available. What are you going to do? Do you have any objections with the way they've handled this pitching staff? I think they're doing the best they can with what they've got.
I was hoping we'd get to this because we like to admit when we're wrong on the Riverfront, and I was leading the fire David Bell charge.
Oh, here we go.
For months. But why did I feel that way? His teams had only underperformed. Some of that roster lineup construction was just disgusting, and I still get furious, though it hasn't happened in a couple weeks now, which is good, when Kevin Newman bats lead off against right-handed hitters, which I don't think we'll see now because we got the guys to prevent that. But the team's playing way above their station right now. And if I'm going to take away from David Bell when they're not, I got to give him his credit when they are. And you can't fire a manager in the midst of an 11-game win streak, a win streak that the team has not seen in 66 years or however many years it's been, since 1957. So, David Bell, I apologize. I might feel differently later in the year. I reserve the right to change my mind once again, but I no longer want David Bell to get fired, at least not yet.
Wow. Amazing. Breaking news here at the Riverfront. I think he's been fine with the pitching staff, and I think this is probably the first time where the team has really kind of outperformed their expectations. And I saw somebody ask earlier today, how much credit do you give David Bell for that? Well, I don't know, but he gets some of the credit. He gets some of the credit. Now, the next question is, how do you beef up the staff? Through call-ups, trades, guys return from injuries, etc. And this is the thing I want to end on here. Mm-hmm. It's something I started to bring up earlier. It was on our outline earlier, and I skipped over it. What do we do now? The Reds are in first place by a game and a half, and we're almost to the end of June. And that's still first half of the season. We haven't gotten to the All-Star break yet, but it's a bad division. It's not likely to get much better, although I expect the Cardinals to make a run. I expect the Cubs to make a little run.
I'm worried about those Cubbies.
Yeah. But the Reds have some pieces now because these guys have arrived earlier than expected. And it's clear, and the outfield and the pitching, those are the two big problems preseason. The outfield has kind of resolved itself by some guys. This happens on every good team. If you go back to all the earlier Reds good team, there's some guys that outperform expectations, and that's how you take that leap. That's happened in the outfield this year. So now it's the pitching. And the Reds have no depth. They have less than no depth, and that's on Nick Kroll. It is. But the question that I have here, and I'm pretty clear on this because you said you sort of took my line earlier, which is these minor league guys are only valuable to me in terms of how much value they can provide to the big league roster, either as a player at some point or what they can bring back in a trade. The Reds have a solid farm system. So the question is this. Do you trade Noel V. Marte? You trade one of these guys, not to get a guy that we're only going to have for 3 months.
No rentals.
No rentals. But if you can get a guy that can be for the next 2 or 3 years, if you can get a pitcher that can be, first of all, it makes you better the rest of this season. And then on next year, when they should, God, I'm guaranteed to say this, they should legitimately be a contender next year. What a time to be alive. So I think you trade. I think he has to be working the, now it's tough with pitching because so many teams want, need pitching. So I don't know if he can make a deal, but they do have a little bit of prospect depth they can deal from. Do you, I guess the question is this. Do you trade Noel V. Marte to get Luis Castillo? That's my question.
I'll just run that tree back in the opposite direction. Let's go.
Anyway, I don't, I'll set you up and let, let you.
I don't have a ton to add. There are three players that I don't want to trade. Those are Christian Encarnacion Strand, Noel V. Marte, and Cam Collier. But you have to listen on all three. Because the fact of the matter is, if you're not willing to listen on these guys, if you want to keep this robust farm system, then you're telling me you don't like the guys that are playing right now? Because if those three guys come up, or some of these other guys, then somebody's got to go out. You can't play 11 above average hitters. So somebody's got to go. Do you want it to be one of the guys that they have now, or do you want it to be one of these prospects? And that begs another question. What happens if you can take the TJ Friedels and Jake Fraley's of the world, package them with a lower ceiling prospect? Can you get a 4 or 5 starter with a little bit of team control? I don't know. But they should be entertaining every single one of these options. It should not be a rental. It should be a guy that they have for at least this year and two more. But how many division winners have the Reds had since 1990? You gotta freaking go for it, man. You can't. Yeah. I don't wanna go all in. I don't wanna mortgage the entire future. I don't wanna give up what the Twins gave up to get Tyler Mahle. But if Nick Kroll is as good as he's at his job as it looks like he might be, then
you just said that. You just said that.
Because he's made a lot of really good moves lately. He's got a couple more. He's got a couple more before I'm a believer. Let's put it that way. And he needs to do something with Edwin Arroyo. A lot of people love Edwin Arroyo. He's a top 100 prospect. The guy is 11 years old, and he's hitting really well in like low A or high A. So like he's so far away. If you can take something like that, there's 3 years of him potentially getting injured or just not developing. If you can turn that and a couple other little pieces into a controllable starter, you got to do it. You have to freaking do it. Because the Reds need three.
Yeah.
They don't need one guy. They need at least three guys. So we'll see.
Well, if Kroll doesn't go out and get some pitching at the deadline, then it's a disaster. Because if you just get some pitching and then hopefully have some of these guys get healthy again and you can make a run, that's the bare minimum. But I don't want them to trade any of those guys you mentioned. And I would add Arroyo, Edwin Arroyo to that group. But I don't mind them trading any of them. I'm not going to get upset with any of those guys being traded. Again, until you make an impact on the big league level, you're trade bait. Well, even at the big league level, there are no untouchables. I trade everyone at any time for the right deal. But here's the thing. I don't want any rentals either. The Reds do not need to get a rental. I would love for them to just kind of go all in and get a rental and try to go this year. That does not make sense. But the flip side is this. How often during your lifetime, Nate, how often have the Reds had an actual chance as we got close to the trade deadline? If the Reds don't make some moves, if they don't do something to improve the pitching, I'm going to be upset. And we don't want to be upset today because it's good vibes only and we're having a lot of fun. But I think the Reds do need to make some moves. And nobody wants to trade these. It kills me. People love prospects. No one wants to trade these prospects. I would absolutely trade them. Again, not for a rental, but for guys that are going to be here past this year. But it makes so much sense to trade from your depth. You have 1,000 shortstops. Trading is some pitching. And the next 6 weeks are going to be really interesting. I'm really interested to see what Nick Kroll does because this is an opportunity. Maybe it's because, everything's going right. This is absolutely the best case scenario for the Reds. No one could have predicted it. I didn't predict it. Again, talking about admitting when you're wrong, but no one predicted it. The kids got here early. and the division is bad. So it's kind of this perfect storm. So do you take advantage of that? You have to. How many chances do you get to compete? You have to take advantage of it. So I'm really interested in seeing what Crawl and the Reds do in the next 6 weeks. And I'm excited to see.
Yeah. Let him cook.
All right. Goodness gracious. I should have known it would go long because this has been as fun as we've had.
I have no thoughts. I have no thoughts.
Okay, good then. Thank you to everyone for listening to and supporting the Riverfront. Tell your friends about us. That's the way to grow a podcast. If you tell people about us, please remember to subscribe to the show either on YouTube or in your favorite podcast app. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're at Riverfront Cincy on all those platforms, at Riverfront Cincy. And once again, huge thank you to our supporters at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. This show would literally not be possible without the support of our Patreon family, which includes my favorite guy, Jacob Figgins. Thank you to all of you. Come join in our hijinks. Go to patreon.com/riverfrontcincy or click the link in the show notes. Also, if you go check out our social channels, you'll see that we're doing a ticket giveaway. Tickets to an upcoming Reds game. We'll have to talk about that more maybe next week. That's it. Shout out to Adam Dunn. Shouts to Luis Alberto and Wayne Krinchicki and Eli Cash for Nate Dotson and Joey freaking Votto.
Let's go.
This is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.